Grandjean of your theory, which is 10 to the 28 centimeters because of the obvious reasons, if we want to explain acceleration of the universe. So I will discuss what this idea would tell us about fundamental physics, fundamental nature of gravity, and what are the experimental consequences. So this is the outline of my talk. So I will discuss, first I will discuss motivation for this kind of ideas. And then I will discuss two effects which are crucial. So I will try to keep my discussion as general as possible to cover as big range of models as possible. So there are two effects which are crucial for this kind of considerations. This is discontinuity of this theories of gravity and the so-called strong coupling phenomena. And these two are crucial to understand predictivity of those theories, their viability, and also observational consequences, which are pretty generic. And so I'll discuss observational consequences about cosmology, planetary motion, LHC, submillimeter gravity, etc. So one message is that, of course, this idea is an alternative to dark energy. So the one conclusion is that in contrast to dark energy models, the models of modified gravity, if they are models, so that means that you can really write down something concrete, not just say words, but just write down something concrete. So those models are extremely constrained. And they are testable basically at any scale by precision gravitational experiments. So by precision cosmology, of course, planetary motions, and in some cases by submillimeter tests and LHC. And of course, this is, from what I understand, this is informal, so you can interrupt me anytime with questions. So the motivation for this kind of approach is there are two motivations, the dark energy or cosmological constant problem. Now, but it is obvious that there is something strange is going on with gravity at large distances. So the question is, what is this? What is it? And but even if you don't worry about this motivational part, you don't worry about dark energy or cosmological constant problem, there is still a fundamental question. Can you modify Einstein's GR in a consistent way at large distances? Okay? And if yes, what are the experimental consequences? And the answer turns out to be highly non-trivial and pretty profound. Now, we know for sure that gravity, GR, has to be modified at short distances. Modified, I mean, it has to be embedded in a bigger theory. We know because of singularities, in black hole singularities or Big Bang singularities. So the question is, what about large distances? Now, this is a very schematic diagram of regions where we know about gravity and we don't know. And we had a beautiful talk in the the first talk by Eric about pushing this frontier. So anyway, so we have this region, which starts roughly from, I don't know, quarter of a millimeter, goes to 10 to 28 centimeters. And in this region, there are no reasons to suspect that Einstein's GR, 3 plus 1 dimensional GR, is not a good description, okay, of nature. There may be some deviations, but those are small. So now we have no idea what's going on beyond this, or even around that scale, because something strange is going on at this scale. And we have no idea what's going on beyond this scale. We know that at some point, quantum gravity should, string theory or something should kick in at very short distances. But where does this happen? We don't know. Okay. So in my talk, I will concentrate on theories which change something here. But it will come immediately clear that you cannot do that. You cannot just change something here without affecting gravity at all scales. That's a peculiarity of gravity, and it's very special. So that's one of the key points of my talk. Okay. Now, what I will do in my talk, I will sort of alternate some field theoretical arguments and GR description. And it's very, you will see that the field theoretical arguments often are very useful to in order to understand some very generic properties of those theories, okay? Without even knowing that those theories exist. Okay? So this is the class of theories that my conclusions will apply to. Okay? So I will concentrate on the theories which are generally covariant. So it is still Einstein's GR framework. So there should be general covariance. No ghosts, like no negative norm states or stuff like that, which essentially means that if you take one graviton exchange, if you write down the graviton propagator or the amplitude for one graviton exchange between two energy momentum tensors, this means that on a Lorentz preserving background, this propagator has a spectral representation with a positive definite spectral function, semi-positive definite spectral function. Okay, so that will be the requirement. Now, if you want to break general covariance, or if you want to have theories with ghosts, then my conclusions will not apply. So those will be different class of theories. Okay. Now, the simplest you could imagine for modifying gravity at large distances is somehow giving a mass to the graviton. Okay, so if you could imagine that you give a tiny mass to graviton, that would change gravitational interactions at the scale of the corresponding mass scale. Now, unfortunately, it seems that there is no theory from that consistent class of massive gravity. But nevertheless, it is useful as a guideline to understand what is happening with massive gravity at the linearized level. So I don't know any nonlinear, fully generally covariant theory of massive gravity. Therefore, my talk will not be about massive gravity. But there is a unique theory at the linearized level, okay, which is called Pauli-Firth for the graviton mass. And this information is extremely useful because although there is no theory of single massive graviton, you will see that essentially all the theories of modified gravity somehow can be understood as a continuum or infinite number of massive gravitational states. Okay, and so therefore it's very useful to understand what's going on with massive gravity at the linearized level. And as I said, if this theory is unique, so you can only have one mass of this form, Pauli-Firth, then in the 70s, there was the following observation by Van Damme, Weltkron, and Zakharov. And the observation was that if you take this massive gravity theory, and if you compute, let's say, a linearized, you compute one graviton exchange. So let's say, I don't know, you want to compute gravitational potential of the sun in the linear approximation, in the leading approximation. So you compute one graviton exchange between the sun and the Earth. And you get the following amplitude. And this amplitude exhibits a following feature, which we call discontinuity, the divisive discontinuity. There are two differences from the massless case, okay, from the Einstein's case. So one difference is that you have a mass in the propagator, in the propagator, which tells you that Newtonian gravity becomes Yukawa at large distances. Now that certainly is continuous, because if you take mass to zero, this will recover normal massless propagator. But then there is a difference in the tensor structure. So in the Einstein's case, you would have one half here. In the massive case, you have one third. Now, this one half you cannot convert into one third, no matter how far you go, no matter how small you take the graviton mass. And this will amount to like 25% difference in, for instance, light deflection by sun. And this is testable. Actually, this is ruled out. So basically, this one third is ruled out by solar system observations. So therefore, the conclusion was that. So this is certainly true, what I said so far. But based on this fact, Van Dam, Veltman, and Zakharov, they made a generalized conclusion. Their conclusion was that the massive graviton theory is ruled out no matter how small is the mass. Okay. Now, and the second part is incorrect, basically. Now, if this were true, this would be extremely important, because then this would rule out not just massive theory of gravity, it would rule out any modification of gravity at large distances, period. Okay? Because any modification, as I said, you can spectrally, unless you have ghosts in your theory, you can spectrally represent in the following form. The amplitude would be sum of these amplitudes. And there would be no way to get here 1/3. Usually would get here 1/2 plus alpha, where alpha is usually 1/6 or bigger. But there's no way to get 1/3, unless your theory contains some negative north states and is inconsistent. Okay. So this conclusion would be extremely powerful if it were true. Now, so what is the way out? First of all, the question is whether this is true. Now, the thing is that in Einstein's theory, right, in GR, so in GR, what you can do, you can take Schwarzschild solution, and you can rewrite it in terms of Feynman diagrams. Okay? So for instance, the Newtonian law, linearized approximation of gravity, Newtonian law, when we orbit around the sun, the way you can understand it is one graviton exchange. Okay? So let's say this is sun and this is Earth or whatever, or some planet. So basically, in this language, you are looking for a scattering problem in quantum field theory, in field theory, by exchanging gravitons. Okay? So now, most of the time in Einstein's theory, most of the time when we orbit around the sun, we mostly exchange one graviton. Okay? Very rarely we do this kind of diagrams, these kind of exchanges. So therefore, in Einstein's theory, the linearized gravity is a good approximation. So it gives you leading results. Okay? And so this was the conclusion of Van Dam, Veltman, and Zakharov, because they assumed that this was still true in massive gravity. And that turns out to be wrong, because now it's a different theory. Okay? So in other words, the thing is, and this is very generic, the point is that now, suppose you write down, you want to change gravity at large distances. Okay? So you write down your Lagrangian on the blackboard. You introduce some distance scale. The thing, the only way your theory, if it belongs to this class that I've outlined, the only way your theory could survive solar system tests is if the expansion in G Newton breaks down in your theory, period. Okay? If in your theory linearized gravity is a good approximation in solar systems, then that theory is ruled out by solar system observations because of what VDVZ said. Okay? So therefore, the only way is that somehow the G Newton should not be a good expansion parameter in the solar system for those theories. Okay? So this was the point. And so so we decided with Cedric Depailler, Arkady Weinstein, and Gregory Gabaladze, we decided to really understand what's going on at the level of diagrams, okay, in this theory of massive gravity, whether this is the case. And here is what we discovered. Now, the thing is, so this is, if in field theory, if you write down graviton propagator, this is how it looks in the massive case, okay? Now, the thing is that this eta mu nu is not a flat Minkowski tensor, but it consists of two parts. So it's eta mu nu plus p mu p nu. And p mu nu p nu, they are singular in the graviton mass. Now, this corresponds to the fact that your massive graviton has additional polarizations. It includes additional degrees of freedom. Okay? And those degrees of freedom, that's why you had precisely this discontinuity. This 1/3 in the exchange, in one graviton amplitude exchange, was precisely amounting to the fact that your theory has new degrees of freedom, inevitably, which are coupled to the concert sources, and they contribute to the exchanges. Okay? So these are precisely these degrees of freedom which are doing this discontinuous job. Okay? Now, however, if you are familiar with the propagator of the massive gauge field, you will immediately recognize this expression. It has the same property, that the longitudinal polarizations of the massive gauge fields, including gravity, they are coupled in a way that which is singular in the mass. Okay? So this tells you that you cannot really take limit when mg goes to zero without really doing something singular. Okay? So therefore, now, so you can ask, how come VDVZ didn't notice this? They didn't notice, because in that case, these terms were unimportant. Because if I take this and convolute it between two conserved sources, these terms cancel out, right? Because of the conservation of the source. But the moment you look for, go to nonlinearities, so these terms do not cancel out. Anyway, so basically the point is that if you compute gravitational interactions, vertices, there will be interactions which are singular in MG, okay? So in the other words, there is a strong coupling effect. So if you naively compute these diagrams, you will discover that there is a divergence, there's this vertex blows up as the fifth power of the momentum in the massive theory. And so therefore, you cannot really take MG to zero and still use linearized approximation, okay? So that's the key point. Now, when we discovered this, we were very happy, because this was the point, this was indicating that this VDVZ conclusion, it was not correct. So the massive gravity, we don't know if it's ruled out, just based on linearized approximation, okay? Right, so anyway, so there is this, now at that point we didn't understand why this was the leading divergence. Then later there was another language, a very nice language, a ghost stone language introduced by Arkanihan and Schwartz and Georgiai. And in that language you see why this the leading contribution is trilinear vertex. I mean, what, in our case it looked like some accident. All the other vertices, they kinematically canceled out. So this was the leading divergence, okay? Yeah. Oh, because gravitons couple, these are virtual, two virtuals which couple to the energy momentum of a graviton. So energy. The vertex goes. No. It's energy over M Planck, right? The coupling to the, when you couple to a source, it's energy of the source over M Planck, right? So, no, it comes. And then you have two virtual ones, they have two P minus in them. So you get the leading divergence is P to the fifth. Okay, so basically this diagram accounts for the fact that the virtual graviton couples to two others. Okay, and then of course the conservation, you don't have conservation of the source in the virtual vertices, and that's why that doesn't cancel out anymore. So you have if you power count these divergences. I mean, you naively may think that you should have higher singularities, like MG to the 8 or whatever, but those cancel out. So this is the singularity that that you can see. Yeah. I'm sorry, spin zero, where? No, there is a, yeah, massive, yeah, thank you. So the massive graviton, in Pauli first graviton, the massive graviton, well, in general, massive graviton, because that's the only one massive graviton which can exist. It has five polarizations. So they are, on top of the two normal polarizations of the graviton, we have two spin ones and then one spin zero. Now, spin ones are not a problem for discontinuity, because they do not couple directly to the conserved source, to us. But the spin zero one couples. So it's like an additional scalar, but it's a scalar which is built in the graviton itself. So you cannot really separate it out. So now this is a very important effect, because then you can say, okay, then we try to see what happens at the solar system distances, okay? And we computed simply, okay? So this, what we computed is that this is sun and this is some probe planet, for instance, okay? So at solar system distances, if you compute this so-called leading diagram, which you thought was leading, actually this leading diagram is 10 to the minus 32 times the other one, okay? So the leading term in G Newton is 10 to the 32 times smaller than the G Newton square. And obviously, this VDVZ conclusion is completely unapplicable for solar system considerations, which are the most important ones, okay? So therefore, the question is, okay, this gives you a loophole why massive theory of gravity, and therefore some theories of modified gravity, are not immediately ruled out by solar system observations. So the question is, what is the story? Are there theories, and what are their predictions, okay? Now, by the way, these arguments, these field theoretical arguments, are very powerful, because now you can immediately say what should be a generic properties of modified gravitational theories, even without knowing that those theories exist. Okay, so if somebody one day comes and tells you, okay, here is a consistent theory of modified gravity, you know that what the properties should be based on this consideration. Okay, And the property should be the following, that there should be, inevitably, there should be a new mass scale, which we call R star, okay? And this R star is the new mass scale which marks where the perturbation theory in G Newton breaks down. So as I said, in your theory, if it's compatible with observation, perturbation theory in G Newton should inevitably break down at some distance. Otherwise, theory is just ruled out. There's nothing to talk about, okay? And so the property should be the following. So there should be, there are two mass scales, right? There is RC, which you put in the Lagrangian, which you thought that was the scale where you modifying gravity, okay? In reality, these two scales, the gravitational radius of a body, so let's say you have a gravitating body, I don't know, some black hole or our sun or whatever, of mass m. So it has a gravitational radius, the Schwarzschild radius, and naively would think that there is another scale, RC, which you put now by hand in the theory, okay, some horizon scale or something. But these two scales inevitably produce the third one. And the third scale is the scale which marks where theory is Einsteinian and where it becomes non-Einsteinian, okay? So in other words, from RG to R star, your theory is almost Einstein's gravity with small corrections. And beyond R star, it becomes some kind of scalar tensor type. And then beyond RC, it may even become some high dimensional theory or whatever, okay? But it's inevitable. This existence of this scale R star is inevitable in any theory of modified gravity, okay? And this R star is some kind of geometric mean between RC and RG. Now, these alphas and betas are model dependent. I mean, I only know one model, and so I know what the alphas and betas are in that model. But in general, we can expect different models. And now what is interesting is that these models are immediately constrained by short distance gravitational experiments. Because you see, R star is much shorter than RC. So it's not, even if this is horizon scale, R star is much, much, much shorter. And also, R star depends on how light the bodies are. So for light bodies, the modification becomes important sooner. And for heavy bodies, it becomes important farther, okay? So this is very generic. And so the change of the relative change of the gravitational potential, so I call this Einstein sphere or whatever, inside this Einstein sphere, becomes some power of R over R star as opposed to R over RC. And so you see that this you can rewrite as some power of R over RC, but enhanced hugely by the power of R over RG, because RG may be very small, right? If I'm measuring gravitational field of this tells you that I will have an enhancement of this huge enhancement, which I would naively will not guess that it's there, okay? So this is one of the most important effects. So now, I want to bring one sort of example which also highlights the difference, because Alexei Starobinsky told me that we had a discussion this summer, and he told me that there is also, you can define some analogous effect for the GR, okay? And that's an excellent example where you can really see the difference between GR and the modified gravity. Now, the point is that, let's say in GR you have cosmological constants, right? So then you can, and there is this expanding background. So then you can ask, let's say I have a planet which is orbiting around some star, and I can ask, it's a legitimate question, when the expansion rate of the universe will correct the orbit of the planet significantly, okay? So you can also ask this in GR. And so this is the picture, right? So I have this huge RC, it's a horizon, and I have R. And then, well, in GR, yes, also you will have some distance at which you will have small corrections to the planetary orbit, which come from the expansion of the background. Those are power law, as you know very well, okay? And those are power law between R and RC. There is no enhancement. So that's the crucial difference. Because in modified gravity, in GR, you would get some power like this. And what is different in modified gravity is that this power will be enhanced by R over RG. And this is a huge enhancement. Because, I don't know, if you are measuring solar system distances, the gravitational radius of the sun is like 3 kilometers, and so now if you are measuring at 10 to 18 centimeters, this factor is huge. And so this is a qualitative effect. And the reason why it is there, because in GR, there is no strong coupling effect. In any modified gravity theory of this sort, which survives, which is not immediately ruled out, there must be a strong coupling effect. So that should be the effect, okay? So that's the key point. And as you know, as you see, this is generic. I didn't specify even a theory. I just assumed that it's consistent. Then this follows. Now, going to the acceleration of the universe, right? So we have, we have Friedman equation, which has left-hand side and right-hand side. And the question is, the way we usually write it down is that left-hand side is gravity, and right-hand side is the source. And so the question is, which side you want to modify if you want to have explain acceleration of the universe, OK? So is it dark energy or is it modified gravity? From the previous discussion, as I said, this is one general, very general message that follows from what I said immediately, is that the moment you modify gravity, so you can argue in the following way. You can take Einstein's Lagrangian, okay, like Einstein's action, and then you can try to add some gauge invariant operators which dominate in far infrared, okay, which dominate at very large distances. Okay, the point is that the moment you do that, you create this discontinuity. That limit when RC goes to infinity is different from Einstein's theory, because the moment you wrote something here, it implies that you introduce new degrees of freedom in your theory. So that's why gravity is extremely constrained. And no, I'm talking about the lower dimensional invariants, which include the metric invariants. Now, of course, if you add matter or scalar fields, that's a separate story. Yeah, but it's metric independent operator. Right, of course. I mean, you can. I mean, we are metric independent. Yeah, but I mean, this is important. Look, we are also metric independent operators. That's fine. I'm talking about the moment you introduce something that dominates in far infrared, which depends on the, which you can express as an invariant, or even as a non-local invariant of GR, of metric, then this follows what I said. Right? I mean, lambda, of course, I agree, but lambda is not independent. Lambda is not a modification of GR. Graviton still has two polarizations, I mean, as you know very well. So anyway, so the point is that in other words, the moment you do that, the new mediator of the gravitational interaction, new graviton, will not contain two polarizations. It will contain some more. In other words, graviton will stop to exist as a massless spin two particle. It will be something else, okay? It may become a resonance, some unstable particle or something like that, but it won't be just a massless boson with spin two, okay? Now, this also tells you why these modified gravity theories should have this property of self-accelerated branches of the universe without dark matter, without dark energy. Now, the way you can think of it, I mean, this is qualitative, but it's pretty good, this way of thinking about it. Because you see, you can think about it in the following way. Like, take Einstein's theory, GR, right? Einstein's GR, 3+1 dimensional. I mean, again, the theories that I'm talking about are still generally covariant. So in that case, in that sense, it is still Einstein's framework. So take normal 3+1 dimensional GR with massless graviton. Then, and put lambda, cosmological constant. Well, then you have h positive lambda, let's say. Then you have h squared equals to constant from the Friedman equation. Now, h squared equals to constant, in the language of field theory, if you want, graviton field theory, corresponds to the fact that there is, because our universe is accelerating is at a constant rate, let's say, there is a constant space-time curvature. Space filling, constant space-time curvature. Okay, so space-time curvature has an expectation value. So in other words, you have a graviton condensate, if you wish. So if you have a classical graviton condensate which fills the space in some pretty good sense. Okay. Now the reason, now you understand that the reason why accelerated universe in Einstein's theory needs dark energy is because graviton is a massless boson, and massless bosons do not condense unless you have a source, right? In this room, if I want to keep this photon, this light, right, which you can think of it as a photon condensate if you wish, I need a source. If I switch it off, the only solutions I have are waves, okay? But as you know very well, massive bosons, they do condense on their own. I don't know, if you have a scalar field, for instance, if you have a massless scalar field, For massless scalar fields, the only sensible solutions are waves. But for the massive ones, you can have a condensate, right? So the same is true about gravitons in modified gravity theory. Basically, the moment you modify gravity at large distances, what you are doing, you are sort of giving it some kind of small lifetime or mass to the graviton. So it stops to be a massless boson, and then it can condense on its own without any external source. Okay, so that's the field theoretic way of sort of understanding that. In the language of Friedman equation, what happens is that your Friedman equation in those theories gets corrected by nonlinearities in H square, which have lower powers. Okay, so therefore, you can have asymptotic solutions which are H constant without any matter source. Okay. Now, let me go to a concrete model to just illustrate all these properties. Again, so I want to keep my discussion as general as possible. So what I said so far is applicable to this, to every theory from this class of theories. But let me just discuss a concrete model to illustrate all these points, okay? So the again, I'll treat this as an effective field theory at large distances, okay? The theory is a brain, okay, whatever. Brain is a brain wall. So we have a brain, and we have Einstein's gravity. Let's say, for simplicity, let me take five dimensions. Einstein's five-dimensional gravity. And so there is an additional boundary term on the brain, okay? So this is five-dimensional gravity, and there is a boundary term on the brain. And I'm parameterizing this difference by one parameter, RC. So RC is a parameter. So I will treat RC as a parameter. Now, this term on the brain is not really up to us to include it, because even if you don't include it, it will be generated by quantum corrections. And it's not protected by any holomorphy or anything like that, or even supersymmetry. So what will happen is that, in the other words, basically the point is that because there is a brain, your translation invariance in the extra space is broken spontaneously by existence of the brain. And so particles that live on the brain, they polarize. And the gravitational field, the external one, polarizes the particles that live on the brain. Okay, and so it results to this effective term. But anyway, since my discussion is about large distance modification of gravity, let me just take this for granted for whatever reason. Okay. So then in this kind of theory, you can ask the following question. Now, suppose I have a gravitating source of, I don't know, some supernova or whatever, distant one, and we are here. And this supernova sends a gravitational wave or virtual graviton to towards us. And you can ask the following question. I mean, will this graviton propagate as 3+1 dimensional, or will it propagate as five dimensional? And it turns out that the answer is the following, that this graviton compromises. So for a while, it propagates as 3+1 dimensional. And then after that, starts leaking into this extra dimension. And because of this effect, the point is that Eric mentioned this morning that the extra dimension, the size of the extra dimension is, if they exist, they should be less than the quarter of a millimeter. That is true, except that there is another window which starts at the Hubble. So extra dimensions could be bigger than the Hubble, or they should be smaller than quarter of a millimeter. The intermediate ones are excluded by precision gravitational experiments, okay? So in other words, if you want to think about physical analogy with, so you can think about the following toy problem, right? Imagine that I have a, I don't know, this blackboard or whatever, some membrane, okay? Metallic membrane, let's say, and which is two-dimensional. And I submerge it in water. And I have some two-dimensional creatures living on the surface of this membrane, which talk to each other by sound waves, okay, sending on the surface of this membrane. Now, the point is that since density of the membrane itself is much higher than density of water, let's say, okay, if you are near to the source of the sound wave, then you don't observe dissipation into extra dimensions. So you think that your world is two-dimensional. Now, if you are far from the source, at some point you notice that the energy gets dissipated into extra dimension. So there is something wrong with the dispersion relation of the sound waves. So it's not exactly 2+1 dimensional. And then you will notice that there is extra dimension. So according to this model, we are in this position today. Okay? So there is this huge extra dimension. But because we are measuring gravity at short distances, dissipation is not significant. And so Or in other words, in the way you can think of it, if you are an effective field theorist, is that graviton acquired a lifetime, which is of order of the age of the universe. And so therefore, if you do Newtonian measurements at very short scales, graviton lifetime is huge, and so you don't see the difference. The deviations are very small. But because there is a strong coupling effect, you will see that these deviations are measurable. And so that's, I'll discuss that in a moment. You can also think in terms of gravitational flux if you want. What happens with the gravitational flux is that if you have a gravitating source, it's like flux sort of sticks to the brain after, and then only then spreads into extra dimensions. So if you measure gravity here, it looks like three-dimensional, 3 plus 1 dimensional. Now, you can ask the following question in cosmology, right? So suppose I have this kind of situation, and I have an observer, like we, right? We are stuck on this membrane, let's say, or on this brain, and we have no idea that there is extra dimension. And what do we do? We measure scale factor of the universe, the time dependence of the scale factor of the universe in some way. And then we write down effective Friedman equation. Okay? So how would that effective Friedman equation look like? It turns out that that's how it looks like. Okay? This effective Friedman equation has a correction. So there is this correction, which is written in red, which is linear in H, in Hubble. Yes? That both signs are possible. So I'm so there, because it's a square root from H square. Okay, this is coming on next time transparency, but to just answer you, because it says it's a you have both two branches. You have branch with plus and branch with minus. But in both cases, you have H over RC. So, yeah. No, in this is to illustrate the point is that you have matter. You have only matter on the brain. So it's, you have a surface, you are not including any cosmological constant there, only matter. So then this is the effective Friedman equation, which you... Exactly, yeah, I'll show that in a second, yes. So I'll show that in a second, this thing. But let me just finish with this transparency that basically the point is that this Friedman equation, obviously, it has property. The early times is normal because when H is small, when H and R are large, this is basically H squared equals to R. But at late times, it becomes linear H dominated, okay? And so, and then even if you switch off completely this R, in a minus branch, you have self-accelerated solution, okay? Right, yeah. Right. Right. Of course, right. These questions are absolutely right. I'm fine-tuning the cosmological constant to that would give you additional contribution, which would appear on the right-hand side of your Friedman equation. Exactly. So I'm fine-tuning that. So right, that's right. So if you can think of it as an orbifold plane or something like that. But right. So in the other words.
I think we did something like what you're proposing, where we had we used the Israel jump conditions and with Einstein's equations in higher dimensions and came up with modified Friedman equations, which is more of the kind of thing you're describing, I think.
Well, yeah, whatever. Anyway, so this.
And modified Friedman equations that give you, in lieu of having a dark energy. Okay, so a lot of people did this kind of stuff, but I'm just referring to this.
Right. So let me sort of reiterate again. So what I'm doing here. So so from five dimensional perspective, you can just write down this brain and solve the Friedman equation, and this is an exact equation found by Cedric Defaye, and then we use this to for the studies of this self-accelerated dark energy. Dark energy less universe. So this is an exact solution, period. So this is an exact solution with the brain having a zero tension. Now, if you add a non-zero tension to the brain, obviously there will be additional contribution, the additional expansion contribution to the expansion of the of the expansion rate, which this is literally the Alex Pilenkis domain wall solution. It will just add to it. So there will be both contributions. So obviously, right? Yes. I'll come to that. Everything is, that things are coming. And but first of all, that's, I don't completely share that point of view, but I'm coming to that. But let me first finish with the point. Anyway, so what I want to say is that so these properties that I listed before, they are very generic for any theory which satisfies these conditions. Now, again, I'm not explaining cosmological constants, why it is small, of course. The point is to just try to understand whether there may be contribution, either dominant or at least non-negligible, to the acceleration rate, which comes from the modification of gravity. Okay, so that's the point. Now, if you add cosmological constant on top of it, obviously the solution will stay, is still there. It will be just a different, a little bit different solution. So the point will, but the key point is that the effective Friedmann gets these corrections, which go like h squared and plus some corrections which are linear in h, okay? This is the point. So effectively, from the effective point of the effective low energy observer, four dimensional one, you have corrections to the Friedmann equation. And these are the corrections which are coming from the theory that you start from the Lagrangian, not just assuming that the Friedmann correction, the Friedmann equation is changed. It's a derived from the Lagrangian, okay? Because of course, otherwise we could assume just without even worrying about fundamental theory, we could also say, well, here's my Friedmann equation, I had arbitrary terms there. The only problem with that approach is that you don't know whether that can come from a consistent theory. So that's the only problem. Otherwise, sure, we can also play very phenomenological game of trying to modify Friedmann equation without worrying about underlying gravity theory, but that's fine. But anyway, so this is just an example, as I said, of a theory which is testable experimentally of this sort. We had like very, very interesting talks yesterday about scanning different models, and this is one of the things where you can really see the difference between the dark energy and the accelerated and the modified gravity, because the they really predict different transitions. Because basically the point is that this theory has one parameter, RC. Once you fix it so that you want to accommodate to the accelerated expansion of the universe, there is no room to play. Basically, you are stuck, and the curve is there as it is, and then you have to compare with observations. Okay? Yeah, sure. Right. So exactly. So the only way, yeah, cosmologically wise, if you only look at supernovae, I don't think that's possible. Right. But of course, quintessence do not predict lunar, for instance, raging and stuff like this. So that's where you can see the difference. Or in structure formation, it's also the same. Quintessence does not really affect structure formation because gravity is still normal in case of quintessence. But I mean, that's a great question. Yes. Anyway, so there were a bunch of papers studying this structure formation, very interesting ones, and stuff like this. And I don't have time to discuss them. But let me go to this issue of the strong coupling, which sort of resonates with Shamit's question. Basically, the point is the same. So now, let's see whether this theory is ruled out by solar system observations. Again, if I do the same, if I compute one graviton exchange in this theory, again, I see that there is a difference. There is this discontinuity. Instead of graviton mass, however, in the propagator, we get P over RC. So it's like this is not a propagator of a massive particle, but it's a propagator of a massive resonance. Okay, so graviton became a resonance in this theory, as it should be, because in this theory is intrinsically five-dimensional. It's just as short distances, this brain fools us, and we think that graviton is four-dimensional, but in reality, it is a resonance. Okay. So this means that when this graviton has additional degrees of freedom, this discontinuity. And again, the same question: are these gravitational interactions, are these G Newton expansion? What's going on with G Newton expansion in the solar system? Because as I said, this also applies to this theory. If G Newton expansion in the solar system were good, this theory would be ruled out to start with. And that's precisely what we thought when we wrote it down. When we wrote it down, we thought that this theory was ruled out because of this discontinuity, okay? But then with Arkady Weinstein and Cédric Defayet and Gregory in the same paper, we also analyzed this theory together with massive gravity. And we discovered exactly the same strong coupling behavior, a little bit softer, because this is not a massive gravity, it's a resonance, but it's the same story. Because of these additional polarizations, become strongly coupled. And now the leading diagram, there was this question about this, now is P cube, okay? Now the reason why it's P cube is because for massive gravitons, it's like P to the 5. But now this guy has a mass which is momentum dependent, in a sense, okay? It's a resonance, so that it became P3, so. Okay, so there is a strong coupling effect. Now again, this tells you that this theory is not ruled out because of the strong coupling effect, okay? Otherwise it would be ruled out, period. There would be nothing to discuss. Now, I know that in literature then people tried to eliminate this strong coupling, but that's sort of pointless because then you are eliminating what saves you. Because without strong coupling, there is nothing to talk about, okay? This theory would be flat ruled out. So that's the point. So the question is, what about Schwarzschild solution? In other words, if I do the result, what about different solutions of Einstein's theory? Now they have to exhibit some continuity if this theory is not ruled out. So in other words, of course, if you are a field theorist, you go ahead and resum all these diagrams and you will never finish. And if you are a general relativist, then you just go and solve Einstein's equation and find the solution, okay? That's what you'll do. And there were different... So people basically checked all these solutions except, I don't know if anybody did domain walls, what happens with the domain wall. But all the other known solutions of Einstein's theory, like cosmology, we checked in the same paper where we pointed out this discontinuity, that it should be, in other words, the point is this, right? That on a curved background, because of nonlinear effects, the theory should become again continuous. Because the expansion parameter should not be G Newton, it should be RC, 1 over RC, okay? And so recently, Cédric Defayet, so he finally showed that there is this recovery of continuity on the FRW branch, which was, I found it very technically difficult and very interesting. Okay. Yes. Yeah, that's right. So the cosmology is exact. This is also exact, FRW. Cosmic string and cosmic string, the other solutions, they were found in 1 over RC expansion. And then this solution is exact, yeah. I know, yes, I mean, this is not my result. So again, so there is solution in 1 over R expansion, 1 over RC, which were a number of people found as expansion in 1 over RC, right. Then recently, these two guys, they claimed that they have an exact solution. So again, I haven't checked it, but I share the sort of, I had a bunch of questions to them and stuff, but I don't know, that's what they claim, yeah. No, what they explained is that they proved that they recovered solution on the brain, and then they proved some uniqueness theorems about the completion in the bulk. So that's what they told me, right. I'm not defending, I mean, to me, 1 over RC expansion is as good as anything, okay? By the way, this 1 over RC expansion, I understand the best, physically, because that is crystal clear, why it should work and how it should work and et cetera. But, so, oh, okay. Right, no, yeah, right, they explained me, I mean, I have their talks and stuff. They explained me that they proved some uniqueness theorems as far as completion in the bulk is concerned, right. Right. You also had 1 over RC solution, right? Right. Whatever. Oh, okay, sorry. That's right, sorry, okay. Anyway, so what is the physical picture emerging out of this, which exactly resonates from what I said about generic properties of these theories? Is the following, okay? So if you have a, take any gravitating source, okay? Then This gravitating source carries some kind of an umbrella or halo, whatever you want to call it. I call it Einstein's sphere, with a radius r star. Why Einstein? Because inside, the solution is very close to Schwarzschild with small deviations. Okay. So in other words, what is important is that this r star is a geometric mean between gravitational radius and the horizon scale. Rc is the horizon scale, which is much smaller than Rc, of course, unless you go to the universe. Okay. And inside, gravity is almost Einsteinian gravity with small deviations. So in other words, heavier is the source, bigger is the sphere. So for heavy sources, to detect deviation from Einstein's gravity is much harder than for light sources. So for heavy sources, you have to go farther to see the difference. Now, if you start increasing this RG, at some point you hit RG of the universe, and then you know that RG of the universe is Hubble. And so for the universe, all the scales coincide. And that's why also cosmological evolution is 100% modified in this theory. Okay. So in other words, so inside this Einstein sphere, the corrections to gravity, to Schwarzschild, they go like this, OK? That's the equation. So now, this is universal. So all you have to change is you have to change the source, RG, OK? So now you tell me at which scales you can do precision measurement. So you can look for the sources for which you can do the precision measurement of this change, and this equation has this peculiarity that it's very good, as I said, it's very good for light sources. For light sources, you don't have to go far because RG inverse RG compensates, but for heavy sources, you have to go pretty far. So we looked around in the solar system. And at the beginning, we thought this is what with Andrei Gruzinov and Matthias Dalderiaga. And we looked in the solar system around, and what these corrections do, they induce anomalous perihelion precession of planetary orbits. Okay, and so first we thought that the orbit of the Jupiter was the best thing, because it turns out that for the Jupiter, the corrections are so important that it's like by factor of 30 away from the existing limits. But the problem is nobody is planning anything for Jupiter. Then Eric Adelberger came, was visiting NYU, and he told us that we should instead look for the moon because of these lunar ranging experiments. And again, the difference is like some kind of factor of 30 between what this theory predicts for the lunar orbit and what is the current precision experiment, which, as we heard in this beautiful discussion this morning, is astonishing. And but there is this new generation of the experiments that was discussed in this morning. So I won't repeat. I will not repeat it, but just tell you that which can go up to 10 to the minus. This is today's accuracy. And then hope is that maybe they can go down to 10 to the minus 12. In that case, you can test or rule out this kind of. This kind of theories, okay? So these are these lunar ranging experiments that Eric showed this morning with the, I'm only adding astronauts to this discussion, okay? So these are these retroreflectors that that look like corner of this room. And so they have this property, they shoot lasers back, and we had this whole discussion about it. By the way, how much time do I have? Nothing, right? 2 minutes. Of course, there are some open questions in the whole class of these theories. Now, obviously, because G-Newton expansion breaks down at the tree level, but obviously, it also breaks down in the loops, right? So the question is, what happens to quantum gravity loops in this theory? Now, there are different ideas back and forth. I don't have time to discuss them. Now, there are two approaches. One, basically, you can think in two ways. One is that this resummation and the fact that this scale, this fixed, but the point is that this scale, see, if you naively extrapolate the blow up of the vertex, this scale is like something like 1,000 kilometers. But of course, in a sense, this thousands of kilometers is fictitious because you need strong coupling everywhere. Already in the solar system, your G-Newton expansion should break down. So it's really a source-dependent thing. But anyway, so the point is that there are these questions about quantum gravity. Now, the only way I see to really answer them is like to find some kind of string string completion, okay? Some string UV completion. I mean, not necessarily the one that really accounts quantitatively for these distance scales and stuff, but at least some string completion which qualitatively would give you the same model, okay? Oh, and there were some attempts in this direction. And then finally, I didn't discuss higher codimension cases, but I want to sort of point out that if you, I mean, again, these higher codimension theories are understudy, and so I don't really don't have time to go into it, but the point is that if you do leading order estimate of the crossover scale in all the theories which have high number of dimensions, the crossover scale changes to this one, the ratio of the between M Planck and whatever is the fundamental gravity scale that you have, okay? Now, from this, it's immediately clear that those models are either ruled out or your fundamental gravity scale should be something like 10 to the minus 3 electron volts, okay? Then, if that's the case, then of course you have predictions for LHC and you have predictions for submillimeter experiments. If so, in other words, if the submillimeter experiments can go down to, I don't know what, but micron or whatever, they don't see anything, then you can close all these kind of models with n bigger than 1. And, yeah. Consistent with what? Oh, exactly. So exactly, that's an excellent question. So here is the answer, okay? Which I find very interesting. Now, the thing is the following. Now, you can forget about these models completely. Just ask a very phenomenological question, okay? So no motivation, just phenomenology and experiment. So you can ask the following question. Suppose standard model particles, we are made of standard model particles. Suppose we couple to some gravitational sector, and that gravitational sector has a spectrum and couplings of closed strings, okay? Then you can ask the phenomenological question. So what can be the tension of those closed strings in order not to be ruled out? And there are four different bounds that you can think of, okay? The collider, obviously, collider bounds, early universe, submillimeter gravity, and astrophysics, like star cooling. All these bounds give you the same bound, which is 10 to the minus 3 electron volts. So this is an experimental fact, period, okay? So if you are coupled to the closed strings, whose spacing is 10 to the minus 3 electron volts, but you are coupled the way strings should be coupled. So this means that you carefully trace all the those states are produced by string oscillators and they have corresponding suppressions. Then this is the bound. Now with this, from the first glance, looks very surprising because, you know, 10 to the minus 3 electron volts, how can it be? Because then it's a Hagedorn spectrum, we should produce all them. The point is that, of course, you remember the strings, they have Hagedorn spectrum, but each string member couples with 1 over M Planck suppression, but with higher powers to 1 over M Planck because of the oscillator structure. So basically what happens is that if I do cross-section, for instance, right, standard model particles into closed strings, then all the way up to this, so basically the rate goes like this, okay? So it's e to the fifth M Planck times M star square, where M star is the closed string tension. The reason why rate goes like this is because only the states produced out of two oscillators matter. Because the states produced out of more oscillators, they have higher powers of 1 over M Planck suppression, and they do not matter until you hit this intermediate energy scale. So this tells you that if M star is 10 to the minus 3 electron volts, at the TV, the cross-section will be dominated by producing the closed strings. So exactly. So the point is that if your constraints come from nucleosynthesis, you want the universe expands normally till the nucleosynthesis, then the bound is 10 to the minus 3 electron volts, okay? Which I find it interesting. This has to do nothing with any motivation, any extra dimensions. It's just an experimental fact, okay? And so this also strengthens the thing, why should we look for the millimeter, submillimeter, you know, closed string experiments and stuff. Anyway, so I think I have zero time, so I'm going to finish. But there are other questions which I had no time to address, like, you know, people are studying stabilities of those branches, different issues like high codimensions and you know, stuff like this. I'll be happy to answer any other questions. Yeah, so I'll finish here.
Right. one or two urgent questions.
We saw in Ariel Gubar's talk yesterday that the supernova data are putting a fair amount of tension on the simplest one-parameter DGP model. If you combine that with CMB data, which he did not do, you have even more tension in that the supernova data want to push omega matter down to 0.2, the CMB data want to push the DGP omega matter up to 0.4. What do you think of this situation? I mean, it's clearly a very good theory in that it's very testable, but are you ready to add more parameters, a cosmological
right.
constant to the theory?
Right. So, I mean, yeah, so my understanding is that that's great. If you can rule out the theory, that's in the business we are in, right? We are in business of creating theories and ruling them out. So now, unfortunately, if you add cosmological constant, sure, you can save the theory because then you can take RC to be bigger, but then you will also affect lunar ranging tests. So it's not so easy to, for instance, take RC to infinity in this theory. So therefore, of course, the adding cosmological constant will give you some room, okay? But to me, this completely changes the motivation, because the motivation was not to have cosmological constant, right? But in more general, I view this whole thing in very general terms that, I mean, we really have to understand nature of gravity at all the scales. And this accelerated expansion of the universe may be a window of opportunity, because maybe there is something strange is happening at those scales. Now, the reason why people got also interested in modified gravity theories is because they don't have problems with, they don't have their own fine-tuning problems, in a sense that they don't have problems of naturalness, because those scales are infrared scales, and they are not UV sensitive to the cutoff of your theory, okay? So that was one reason. And, but yeah, I mean, my view is that if we rule theories out, that's great. More we rule them out, and partially the reason of my talk was that the point is that precisely that 99.9% of modified gravity theories are already ruled out by solar system observations because of this very profound discontinuity and the strong coupling interplay. Okay, so I don't know if...
One more question, Lee?
Yeah, why don't you ask me and then I answer? Right. Well, I know. Yeah, yes. So, look, I mean, I'm. Yeah, people studied, for instance, Lou and Starkman. They studied as far, I mean, there were a number of papers. I remember Lou and Starkman, they studied lambda, non self-accelerated branch with lambda. What they found interesting is that this model was imitating W less than minus one without having inconsistencies like ghosts and stuff like that, because it is changing Newtonian gravity. I found that very interesting. Now, as far as self-accelerated branches is concerned, I didn't study this issue. I know that you guys claim something, and then there are other guys which claim opposite. No, sorry, look, I mean, I cannot defend something that I didn't do, but they say. That's okay.
I don't think that's the
rational way to discuss it, but. No, I mean, the other guys, there is a complete parity. Other guys may think in the same way.
Okay, we should let Lee ask his question.
I have a very quick question.
Yeah.
Do you have any consistent model where R star is the square root of RC and RG?
Consistent model of?
Where RC is the square root of RC times RG.
R star is the square root of?
RC times RG.
Oh, just the square root?
Just the square root.
No, I don't know any model of that sort. No,
okay.
Sorry.
It should be obvious why I'm asking, but...
No, I don't know any model of that sort. Sorry.
Okay, thank you.
I suggest we take a break here. And let's thank Yadvali again.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm still slightly nervous about short distances somehow. You seem to have your cake and eat it. You have this strongly coupled zero mode, velocity zero.
But which